Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Ah!
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and he was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
Now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? to teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
I go. We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know? You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're gonna put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man, I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
All right. Today's topic, and we'll cover this throughout the balance of the year. It is almost halfway over. Virtual sales, Mount Rushmore. I've got, you know, they got Mount Rushmores for everything. A lot of times people, you know, what's your Mount Rushmore's favorite basketball players of all time on the NBA level or college level, even high school level. Today I'm going to mention my virtual sales Mount Rushmore. You can also call them e-commerce Mount Rushmores. Which are who I consider my favorite four people when it comes to e-commerce and or virtual sales, which I will be modeling. And let me give that out now. Then we'll go into detail on the other side of the other audios we play here. I'm not going to keep you too long today, Monday. Now, of course, if you guys want to listen, Kevin Samuels, for those who know of Kevin Samuels, passed away, I guess, last Thursday. The Internet was buzzing from Thursday afternoon all Thursday night into Friday morning. You know, the Internet was buzzing and with all kinds of, and the autopsy report hasn't been released yet either. So, you know, until that officially comes out, we don't know. Nobody knows. Anyway, so if you want to talk about that, we'll talk about that. But anyway, my e-commerce route, Mount Rushmore, or virtual sales. Mount Rushmore. Oh, man, you know what? That's the thing about Mount Rushmore. I just thought of another person. All right. Let me go with what I got. China Mac. Now, these are the four people, and e-commerce is selling stuff online. Okay. That's virtual sales. You're not face-to-face. I might have to convert my Mount Rushmore. You know what? I'm gonna have a tie in here. I gotta update this. Okay, my Mount Rushmore will have five people, but I'm counting two as one. Let's see. Okay, there we go. All right, here's my Mount Rushmore. In no particular order, but here it is. China Mac, Angela Jasmia / Tom Saray, two different people, but I'm counting them as one. Trying to stick to my you know, because Mount Rushmore, you're just supposed to have four. But so I'm counting two as one. Via, spelled V-I-Y-A, and Austin Li, L-I, she's Chinese. All right. Matter of fact, 75% of this list is Asian of my e-commerce or virtual sales Mount Rushmore. I'm going to go on the other side of this little audio that we're going to play. It's not going to be long. I'm going to go back and run. I'm going to tell you why they're my Mount Rushmores of virtual sales or e-commerce. And if you don't have a Mount Rushmore of e-commerce, you should seriously, because that's where the ball is, folks. That's where the ball is for certain industries or certain businesses right now. And that's where the ball is ever growing. That's where the ball's going, e-commerce. So anyway, I'll explain the reason why I have that virtual, that why those four, actually five, are my Mount Rushmore of e-commerce.
It ain't like stepping on eggs, Jake. Takes a man to kill. Are you man enough to kill, Jake? He'd be right there. Get me, Jack. Get me. Hit me. Hit me. You can't do it. Somebody drop this fool for me.
You got us twisted, homie. We gotta put your own work in around here.
It's like that, Bone?
It's like that.
Player to player, pimp to pimp. I'm believe you shoot me, nigga. Don't do it. Don't do it. Now I'm believe he got it in you, Jake. I'm going to get that gun, and then I'm going to get that money. And you ain't going to do a damn thing, because you ain't going to shoot no cop in the back, are you?
Don't do it.
You know what they give you for that? The gas chamber. You know what the gas chamber smells like? Pine oil. That's where you headed, boy, to pine oil heaven. I'm going to get that gun, and then I'm going to get that money. I don't believe you got it in you, Jake. I'm going to go get it right now.
Oh, shit! You motherfucker!
The next one will kill you.
Oh, son of a bitch! You shot me in the ass!
Okay, wait. Okay. All right, look. Come on, Jake, I need the money. Give me the money, Jake. Give me the money, please, Jake.
Give me that money!
It's not gonna happen.
Oh, you jack me now? You gonna take my own money from me, huh?
I told you, that's my evidence. You wanna go to jail, you wanna go home.
I wanna go home, Jake. Come on, give me your money and let me go home.
Yeah? You wanna go home?
Yeah, let me go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home. Give me the money and let me go home. Let me go home, Jake. That's right, come on, Jake. You don't deserve this. Okay, you motherfucker.
Jake, go ahead and bounce on me. Get up out of here. We got your back.
What?
Like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you didn't. Hey, Jake! Hey! Jake! 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 Come back here! Jake! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jake! I need my money! Jake! Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jake! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me. That's all right. Shit. I don't fuck. I'm winning anyway. I'm winning. I'm winning any motherfucking way. I can't lose. Shit, you can shoot me, but you can't kill me. Ah. Oh, what a day. What a motherfucking day.
And we're back. Okay, virtual, my virtual sales route, Mount Rushmore. I don't know if you have one. Most of the people that I know that when you bring up Mount Rushmore, they're talking about sports. Anyway, Mount Rushmore, when it comes to virtual sales or e-commerce, mine. Okay, if you have one, 619-768-2945. I name China Mac. Angela Jasmia / Tom Saray, two different people, but I counted them as one. You know, that's my, you know, trying to stick to my version of what Mount Rushmore is for e-commerce. Via, spelled V-I-Y-A, and Austin Li, that's spelled L-I, or Austin Lee. Depends on, you know, Lee or Li. Anyway, but those are my four. Now, let me go through why China Mac is an Asian American or Chinese American rapper. All right. And I'm really not into him for his rapping, because most of the content I've run across with him has nothing to do with rapping. But anyway, he does have an audience that he does entertain. But here's why he is in my Mount Rushmore of e-commerce or virtual salespeople. China Mac occasionally goes online, YouTube to be exact, and in his house, he has a spare bedroom or something like that with some simple shelves in that bedroom, you know, metal shelves that we all have seen somewhere before. And he will take orders during his live stream. Now, what China Mac is selling is, now, once again, he's a rapper. You know, he might, as they call it now, drop, you know, and that stream is a whole different thing. But when he does it, the live streams that I've seen, he's not selling the music. What he's doing is he's selling his merchandise. He's selling China Mac baseball hats, China Mac hoodies, China Mac sweatshirts, you know, pick your size. You know, do you want him to, he'll ask you, do you want him to sign it? How do you want me to sign it? Then you'll see him pack it up. It's like, I haven't watched his live streams in a while, but every time I watched him, you know, like last year or even earlier this year, he was fulfilling his own orders, okay? And then he'd pack it up, you know, real nice, and then he would tell you, all right, now I'm going to go to the post office or FedEx or UPS tonight and or tomorrow morning. And then, now sometimes China Mac, he would take some of those orders, and instead of going to the post office or at FedEx or UPS to mail those orders, sometimes, and I really like this touch that he does, China Mac, you know, will go to the person's house and hand deliver what that person ordered online during the live YouTube live stream. And, of course, that would surprise, you know, the person that ordered it. And, you know, you see them, you know, get invited in, and, you know, they feed them lunch or dinner sometimes. You know, if he has the time to stay, and he'll film that and then put that all up on YouTube as well. So China Mac is on my virtual sales e-commerce Hall of Fame. I mean, excuse me, not Hall of Fame, but Mount Rushmore. All right? Because I believe China Mac's methodology is, like, really simple, and anybody can do it. That's why he's on my Mount Rushmore, okay, of virtual sales or e-commerce. All right? I'm going to skip around on this one a little bit. Via, V-I-Y-A, she's a Chinese. Via has got to be one of the top e-commerce influencers, as they call them, on the planet. Via once sold, and she sells everything with a live stream, from houses to cars to cosmetics to rocket launchers. Her and her team, they put it, long story short, she's done over $200 million in a day. $200 million in a day. Using a smartphone or some smartphones. Okay, China Mac is on a laptop doing a live stream, like many of you are right now. Whereas Via, that's her online name, 200 million plus with phones, smartphones. Okay. She's number two. All right. Number three, Austin Lee, or Austin Lai, L-I, depends on how you, he's Chinese. Let's go with Lai, L-I, okay. Austin Lai, also Chinese. Austin Lai has, now this guy, he did a live stream where he sold within a matter of minutes, not 15 minutes, but something like less than 10 minutes. This dude sold over 15,000 sticks of lipstick with his phone. All right. Now, he sells other things. Him and Via did something together where he sold over 200,000, 200 million items worth of merchandise that he was selling, because he sells a lot to women. And Varya sells everything plus the kitchen sink. So they did a combined thing. They have a Singles Day. Well, it's called Singles Day in China. It's their version of Black Friday. Okay, their version of Black Friday. Between the two of them, they combined to sell over $400 million worth of merchandise in a day. The two of them. Just two people. Using smartphones. All right. So, Austin Li, L-I, he's on my Mount Rushmore. Now, 75% of my what his list so far has been all is Asian. All right. Well, we're going to bring some Americans in there. And I combined, I'm counting two as one. And it's Angela Jasmia, that's her YouTube name, and Tom Saray, who he doesn't even come online, I don't believe. But let's get with Angela. Let's get with Angela first. Angela Jasmina, which once again, that's her YouTube, Instagram name. She is Dominican. I think that's her roots. Married to a black man, and they live in a DMV part of the United States, you know, up in the D.C. area. They live in that area. And she was in the foster care system at one time. But in any event, I think she worked at Target Security, a security guard for Target, you know, Target stores. That's where she met her husband. But they had a whole video on that, so you can go online and check that out for yourself. She is a prolific person at making children's clothing. That's her thing. And I think she's just, you know, he had a spare bedroom. This is when they were single, you know, I guess when they were first friends or starting a date or whatever. So she was making, you know, working a full-time job. He's working a full-time job. And so she would make, you know, clothes in the spare bedroom of his house just before they hooked up and all that. And then on weekends, she would take these children's clothes. You know, we're talking about for toddlers, you know, infants, that type of thing. She would take them to the local flea market and sell it. Okay. And she was in school, too. You know, she was in school, college. She's only 27 years old right now. All right. So, you know, she was doing pretty good with flea market sales, and her husband, who's her husband now, he was working full-time. She was going to school plus working. So, man, they were going at it 7 days a week. But on weekends, they would, you know, they do the flea market thing. All right. Hats off to flea markets. So then from the flea markets, you know, she went on, she started to go online, and she would do, and she still doesn't, she would do live streams from home, and while she's doing a live stream, people would call in during a live stream and place orders, and then you would see her make the orders, because she's, you know, she's got, you know, whatever she's making, hats, anything for infants, you know, embroidery and all that type of stuff. So you can see her workstation in her home. She still works in the home. And, you know, she might have 30 orders for hats in an hour. or maybe 100 orders for hats in less than 2 hours, or whatever she was making. So you see her take the orders, then, you know, make the orders, then pack the orders. You see all this. And then, you know, maybe the next day or whatever, or 2-3 days later, you'll see her and her husband do another live stream, and she's in the passenger seat talking to us, and while, the, you know, her husband's driving to the UPS office, FedEx office, or the United States Post Office, and they're mailing the orders off. Now, from her doing live streams, and this is why she's my Mount Rushmore, she's mom and popping it. Her and her husband, black folk, doing what Claude Anderson said to do. Okay, they're working together. You know, there's no argument, fussing, and fighting. Her sister comes over and helps out. And her father-in-law comes over and helps out. She's got two young children still. You know, I don't even think their children are even 4 years old yet, or barely four of that. But the business was so good from the live streams on YouTube that they needed a bigger house because she didn't want to go get a warehouse and spend the extra expense and all this, that, or the other. And really, and she... there was no need to do the flea market thing anymore for what she was doing. So everything's at home. So they got a bigger house, and, I mean, you can see she got more machines, and so you hear the machines going, you see the machines going, the orders are coming in. You see all the people that you see helping her in those videos are blood-related people. They're family members. Her blood, his blood, in-laws, all that. Family-based business. Okay. You see the little kid, even one of her kids, Riley, that's her daughter, that's her firstborn. Riley has her little own station there with a little desk and, you know, electronics or whatever. And, you know, she puts her snacks and food there. And see, what I love about that is, a page out of what you see out of the Chinese restaurants, her daughter and son, because the son is like, he might be 2 years old now. Okay. Man, they're taking that stuff in by osmosis because in a matter of years, you know, 10, 12 years, they'll be old enough. They'll be working in the business, I'm sure. But before they reach 18, they'll know how to run that business. She's up to $1 million plus in sales now, all from home. Angela Jasmine, that's her YouTube name. She's on my Mount Rushmore. Now, I've sandwiched another person in with her because I didn't want to call it my starting fire, but I'm sandwiching another person in with her. In my Mount Rushmore, and his name is Tom Saray. Tom Saray, I don't think he has a YouTube channel. I mean, not under that name, at least. Tom Saray, back in the 80s, built a shed in his garage. Or backyard. And I guess he built another one, and he started to sell them. So he formed a company that some of you have probably heard of before called Tough Shed, T-U-F-F Shed, Tough Shed. And if you go to Home Depot or someplace like that, you can buy, he has a partnership with Home Depot where you can buy a shed right off the Home Depot lot there, wherever he might be located. He's probably one of the largest manufacturers, American manufacturers of sheds in the United States. All right. Last June, Tough Shed built and sold 10,000 sheds in the month of June. Thus, he is in my Mount Rushmore of sales. Or let me tell you why. Let me get why, what qualifies him for that. When I did some homework on how did he do it, some of those sales were made, you know, somebody coming to an office or going to a Home Depot, and I don't think these were Home Depot sales at all, but somebody would come into somebody's office locally and sit down with a, you know, a sales rep or whatever, and orders would be taken that way. But a lot of orders were done virtually. They were done, I mean, people talking from their phone to another person's phone at Tough Shed or from their laptop or whatever electronic device. They were virtual sales. So the person, the client in Tough Shed were not in contact with each other face, I mean, not, you know, in the same breathing room space. All right. So that's my Mount Rushmore of virtual sales or e-commerce. And the reason why I'm saying that is because e-commerce, I mean, eBay is e-commerce. You can probably pick your own Mount Rushmores up there, but it, I mean, hey, that's where the ball's going. And that's where it virtually is, no pun intended, right now. So China Mac via Austin Lai and Invia and Austin Lee, they have a team of people that are helping them. That's how they were able to pull off that. They didn't pull off that $200 million in 24 hours single-handedly. They have, each one of them has their own team. And Tom Saray has his own team. Angela Jasmia has her family as a team. You know, her husband, her sister, sometimes her younger brother. Let's see, her father-in-law. Those are names I've heard. And then, you know, I'm going to throw in, that's four. I'm going to throw in Riley, her four. I don't think her daughter's 5 years old yet. I don't think she's 5 years. She could be. But I think she's four. So that's it. You know, and she's got, you know, four or five people, and they got $1 million-plus business. And you can go right on YouTube and check out, you know, get an idea. But she used to be in, oh, and she was in a foster care system at one time also. But it's amazing. She just started with the farmers markets. And then, you know, took it home. Spare room to the basement. Then they needed a place with a large basement and a large garage because she didn't want to spend the extra, you know, expense of going to a separate warehouse because, I mean, when you get into going to a warehouse, you know, then you got to pay rent and you got to security and all this, that, or other. You know, I hopefully, because they're just growing. Hopefully. I sent them a note when they were looking for their second house. I sent this to them last year. I said, you know, they were looking, because DMV, the DC is kind of tight and congested. I said, look for a place in a rural area and build your house. I'm going to see if I can track them down. And see if I can get her and her husband on this podcast. But because they really are growing like that, And instead of leasing somewhere else, because then you got to, you know, insurance, and you got to pay for this, that, or other, go out into a rural area. Because the way she's got it right now, home and business are all under one roof. And the way they're growing, you know, they need to go out to a rural area and get themselves about 5 acres, build you the house, and then, and I got that idea when I attended a week-long, 7-day workshop some years ago in Ohio. And the people where I stayed at, they lived on 5 acres, and they had the main house where they lived in, which was, you know, a nice house, nice home. And you saw two other buildings. Now, one building was obvious as hell. It was a barn. I'll tell you what was inside the barn in a moment. The other house that was there, and this was a married couple. Their kids were all grown. So, you know, they would do the Airbnb thing. So, occasionally, that's why I was there. Because I was attending a build workshop on earthships and how to build with straw bale and all that. So I stayed at their house for that week. But in any event, the other house was, looks like a regular house, man. It was about at least 1,500 to 1,800 square feet. At least. All right. You go in that house, and the wife, that was her sewing room. A whole freaking house. And everything was on one level. It was like Rambler style. Okay. A whole house. From the outside, it was, you would identify it as a house. Not a tiny house, but a regular. It had, like I said, it was at least 15, bare minimum 15 to 1,800 square feet. If not a little bit larger. Inside. It was her sewing room. That's what she called it. This is my sewing room. Fucking house. Then went inside the barn, and the barn was her husband's workstation. You know, it was set up for, man, you may as well call that thing a factory, a woodworker's factory. But he had that barn laid out, like with all kind of cutting tools, and you know where you can make anything you can think of, furniture wise. So that's what they had on their 5 acres. So hopefully, Jasmine and her husband will they're getting the business right there to roll. Matter of fact, they got the revenue to roll that way now. Now let me go back to the couple I just talked about. This is in Ohio, about 10 or 15 minutes outside of Zanesville, Ohio. They introduced me to their neighbor. Now the neighbor was on like 15 acres of land, and this is before the tiny house, the phrase was coined tiny house. This was before all that came out. So they showed me the house they live in, which is a nice size house, and these are like down home people. You would never know these people if you met them on the street were wealthy. But they were quietly very wealthy. Anyway, he had a private pond in the back stocked, and, you know, he had his workshops in another separate building and all that. But how they started was they built, Mom, Pa, Kettle, they built a small little cabin that she, you know, the husband and wife lived in. They built that first on the 15 acres. Then they built the family house. And then they built, you know, some other structures that they have there, because that's how they roll, man. They work from home like that. So I got to check on them. I haven't checked. The people that introduced me to them, I check with them about once a year. I got to check on them, see how they're doing. But anyway, that's my Mount Rushmore of virtual sales or e-commerce. And we're going to feature more of that because e-commerce is, I mean, like I say, Angela Jasmia, her, I mean, hey, man, they operate from home. Everything is from home. Which is amazing. It's just they work as a team, as husband and wife. And if you watch their YouTube videos, you'll see how they've grown. You see how they've grown. So, and if you follow what they do, I think what they, matter of fact, I know. Her and China Mac is something that everybody can relate to, particularly the little guy. The person who's just starting out, and you can replicate that, okay? So that's my virtual Mount Rushmore on sales. And due to the fact that Angela Jasmia did get started with, you know, by doing, what do you call those, farmers markets, I think we might do a Mount Rushmore of farmers markets. Because the last farmers market that I went to, there was a vendor there. They were selling sheds. They were a dealer selling sheds that were built by the Amish. So I'm looking at, okay. And they had a little bit. Anyway, if you want to see some innovative people, go to a farmer's market. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to start going to more farmer's markets because I think you can get some very good ideas of out there on how people sell stuff. And this particular deal, I mean, this, like I say, the outfit that was selling these sheds, the people that actually make the sheds, manufacture the sheds, I'm sure they do millions of dollars a year. And sell them through farmers markets is just one way to do it. So we might have a farmers market Mount Rushmore here one day. All right, so that's all I've got on my end for today. Later on this week, we're going to do another movie review. So it's Monday, so I'm giving you a head start. On Friday, we're going to discuss 2,000 Mules, the documentary 2,000 Mules. That'll be our movie review for this Friday. So you got 4 days to look and check it out. 2,000 Mules. And if anything else you guys wanted to, you know, discuss as far as, I mean, suggest as movies or documentaries, just let me know and we'll put it up there. Now, the only trending, well, I'm sure there's more trending topics, but the only one I know of was Kevin Samuels has passed. He was a YouTuber. The autopsy report has not been made public yet. So it'll be interesting to find out what that says when it is, when it's been released. He was a polarizing person. Some people have said that he is gone. To many people, he gave some good advice to. Other people didn't like him. One video I saw last night or early this morning said, "I'm glad that Sam, you know, that he's gone." So it runs the gamut. But you know what? When you've got, I mean, he had over 1 million YouTube subscribers, over 1 million Instagram subscribers. The more numbers, the more people that know about you, you're going to have trolls. That's just, I mean, there's nobody who's 100% liked by anybody. That's just the nature of us humans. But any comments on Kevin Samuels? We got an open mic now. 619-768-2945. And let me see. Let's go to the phone lines. 410 area code. Your mic is open.
Hotep, Brother L.A., how are you this morning?
Fine, Hotep. I'm good.
Look. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm listening.
You know what? That's why I try and plug you in as much as I can, because those are some jewels that you shared with us this morning. I'm just shocked listening to how these people are making money. And the thing is, how simple it is for people to make money when they can think outside of the box. I would have never thought of these things that you're mentioning. And the thing, what I need to know is, where can you go out to look at these people and get some information?
You know what, Brother Beasley, I will text you some of my favorite videos by all of these, you know, after I sign off today. But YouTube, all these people are right on YouTube. Chinamax on YouTube with a channel. Like I said, I'll try to send you the ones of him when he's doing his live streams. The rest of his stuff, I'm not into his music. But him selling from one of spare room in his house, that's what I want you to see. Angela Jasmine has got a rack of them on there. But the ones in particular is when she's selling a certain, like, 30 hats, 100 hats an hour. You know, when she breaks down how she did them, you know. And I'll send you some of those. And then Tom Saray. Tough Shit has they're all over the place, but I found a lot of their sales came from virtual sales. So and then with the Angela, and then going back to the Angela Jasmina thing, she started off at a farmer's market. Who would think? I'm looking at a farmer's market. There's a whole new deal now.
Well, I'm familiar with farmers markets, and I told you about I used to do flea markets, which is the purest form of marketing. You know, I've seen a lot of things going on.
Hold on. Give me the distinction between a flea market and a farmers market.
There is none. With the exception that a lot of people go and they sell produce and handmade goods, you know, things that they have hobbies of making, handcrafts and stuff like that. Whereas flea markets, you can sell anything that comes to mind, you know.
Okay.
But farmers markets, you can basically do the same also.
Okay.
I'm just amazed that somebody can sell $200 million worth of stuff a day. I can't even imagine.
Now, they got a team on that, and I'll see the link on those two. But now that's a little bit more advanced, but it can be, I mean, they're using smartphones. But like I say, if you look at the China Mac, or particularly Angela Jasmine, her whole thing, man, if you can copy her, I mean, it's not complicated.
Well, it's not complicated when you see it, but just to come up with the idea, that's the complicated
right.
part. And the imagination, that's mm-hmm. where they differ from other people, because I'm quite sure someone is doing the same thing that she's doing. That's the one that's making baby clothes or something, right?
Exactly. She's making baby clothes.
Do you know how many baby clothes shops is around here? Nobody have ever thought of that. I mean, right in this town, I can go to two baby clothing shops
mm-hmm.
and see that. And the guy selling lipstick, I mean, who would think that somebody could do that, you know? But
right.
You know, I'm just saying, you know, just to come up with the concept.
Well,
that's amazing.
It, with, over in China, it, same thing, matter of fact. They have a holiday over there. I've covered this before. Singles Day, that's November. Man, what's that? November 11th. November the 11th is Singles Day in China. Now, Singles Day is their Black Friday, so to speak. And you've got people online selling all kinds of stuff. Revenue-wise, they dwarf Black Friday here. But
wow.
One of the things that you have farmers in China that, you know, you see people in their, you see them in their orchard, and they're taking orders. And next thing you know, they done sold out for the season.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So they're a little bit ahead of us, but it can be done over here, too. And I'm sure some people are doing it over here. I mean, like it's you got a whole lot of people, but you know YouTube's got everything on it. But like I said, what I like about Angela Jasmine is a Black family, and they started off real humble. You know, going to farmers markets or flea markets, and then you know business picked up, and then they needed a bigger house.
But that's the way it usually starts. It starts off small, and then you gradually grow and until mm-hmm. you get to a point where, you know, you reach scale, you know, for some
right.
people. Some people never get beyond just being small time. But
right.
but let me give you this.
And some people, you know, like with her, I mean, they're taking, I don't know how much they net out of that million, but you know, they might be good with that. I mean, number one, they don't have to go to anybody else's job anymore.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And the kids will grow up in the business, and the kids will be straight by the time they're 15, 16 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is they're doing what they like on their own terms. That's
right.
The good thing about it.
Exactly.
Know? But let me give you this, because I didn't know this. Well, you're in social media and you're advanced. I didn't know that you could make money just going on YouTube and doing like Kevin Samuels and some of these other guys that's up there. The more subscribers you have, I think YouTube pays you money according to the following that you have. Have you studied that?
You know what? I don't know how that works. And I got a couple of friends in Tampa that they were making about, on average, $2,500 a week by
yeah.
doing YouTube videos. But they weren't making that money. They weren't getting paid by YouTube. They were getting paid because people saw their videos and then ordered what they saw them. They used to do a lot of product demonstrations. And a lot of the products that they demonstrated, they would make. You know, I've been to their home. They live like in a rural part of Tampa, Florida. And they got like two shipping containers, and they turned those into basically workstations. So they'll do a video, and then they'll make the product, and then they'll ship it. They were making $2,500 a week on that over 10 years ago when I met them. I think I've known them. Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah, I'm stumbling on a link. You know, well, like if you go on YouTube, they always say hit the subscribe button and hit the like button and all of this stuff.
Right, right.
And basically what it is, I don't know where I saw it at, but they said YouTube usually pays you a fee for going for the number of listeners that you have. And a lot of people are doing that. And I got, if I find that link, I'll send it to you. And the other thing I want to say before you go to the next caller, if you have one, everybody should see China Mack's interview with on Vlad TV, because Vlad TV, that's how he makes his money, by the number of people that goes up there and views
his
interview.
Right, and Vlad's got a lot of he's got a lot of subscribers.
Yeah, and most of it comes from black folk and rappers and all of this stuff and gang members that's up there telling their story. But, you know, that's another story. You know how they capitalize
on us. You
know
what, now he's had the mayor of Washington, D.C. on there, which I thought was interesting.
Yep. Yeah, but most of his stuff comes from gangbangers and rappers.
Oh, yeah, right, gangbangers, rappers, you're right. That's his audience, you're right.
Yeah. And I found China Mack interview, if people can, I don't know which one it was, but he said something very interesting. And I think every black teenager and every black young person needs to see it. He said that Chinese will never sell drugs in their neighborhoods to people in their neighborhoods. They always sell their drugs outside of their neighborhoods. And I would like for our black folks to see that, because while we buying stuff from each other that's coming from other folks selling to people that's selling to us, black people selling to us, that's what he said. And I found that very, very interesting.
You know, I'm glad you bought. Now, I didn't hear that from him, but let me tell you what happened, an experience I happened upon in Baltimore City several years ago. I used to, you know, just to pick up some spare money, I would be what they were calling in Baltimore hacking, you know, picking people up, looking for, this before Uber and Lyft.
Right, right.
You know, so I started it by accident. One morning, I saw a lady. She was, you know, had her hand out, you know, looking for a hack, a ride. So, I was on my way back to D.C., so I said, you know what, let me just try this out. I hadn't seen it a gazillion times. So I picked her up and made a quick $10. Okay. So I did it a few more times before I knew it. I had $100, you know. So, well, you know. So it was an easy way to make $300, you know, spare change on, you know, during the week. So one morning I picked up this kid on the way to school, and he wanted me to take him to. I took him to this little convenience store in the hood, up on the west side of Baltimore, and he went in there and then he came out. But following them coming out of that store was this Chinese woman. And this Chinese woman looked at me like I was the police. Okay. And he said, I'm tired of selling drugs. He said it just like that. I gave him a ride to school from that. So then it came to me, you know what? I said, that's how drugs are coming into these neighborhoods. The Chinese are bringing them in here. That's just a theory based on that one hack I had that morning.
Yeah, that's one source of how they're getting in here. But I found it very interesting that he was on Vlad TV on an interview, and he said an Asian would never sell drugs in their neighborhood to Asians. They sell theirs outside of their neighborhood.
And that's why I brought up that story that I experienced. I was not in an Asian neighborhood. I was in a black neighborhood.
That's right. That's right.
And this he was a school-age kid. Like I said, I drove him to school right after that. Obviously, he had business with this lady. And she was looking at me like I was the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, hey, look, we'll sucker for other racial ethnic groups coming in and doing illegal stuff or either doing illegal stuff for them. But mm-hmm. look, I don't know where you were hacking at in Baltimore, but I had a friend.
I was mostly doing West Side on, I would be up there at Edmondson Village. I'll be going between a lot of the things I got between Edmondson Village on up to sometimes Walbrook Junction, Mondawmin Mall, and with Martin Luther King.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
And on occasion, somebody might need a ride over to the east side, but that was rare.
Okay, because the hackers used to make good money. There was a grocery store over on Bel Air Road. I don't know if you're familiar with Bel Air Road.
I know where that is. That's what, Northeast Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's
where it is. Yeah.
And they'd sit there in front of that grocery store, and people would come out, and they would take them to everywhere they needed to go. Either the people would call them and have them pick them up to bring them to this grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, those guys made a good living doing that.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely make a living doing it.
Yeah, they were making
it. I don't know how it is now because of Uber and Lyft, but back then, this is way before Uber and Lyft, you can make a living doing it. Now, I did it because I learned how it went. I learned already at the beginning of the month, you can make all kinds of money. Or payday,
yes,
you can make all kinds of money.
That's right.
Now, I never worked. I worked like rush hours. But sometimes I would just do mornings, and I make good, and I'm good for the whole day. I never did it, though. The real money was made at night. But I didn't want to be driving, you know, I don't want to be driving in those suspect neighborhoods at night, get jacked and all this other stuff. So most I ever went was like 4:30, I'm out. I'm done for the day.
Yeah. Yeah, that was safe. That was safe. But that's the way these guys would do it. They'd sit in front like Mondawmin Mall. I don't know when you was at Mondawmin Mall, but there used to be a black grocery store. A black-owned grocery store in Mondawmin Mall.
Okay, I don't remember
and
that. Okay.
I can't think of the name of that grocery store now. I get it for you. But anyway, these guys used to sit there in front of that grocery store on the northeast side. Hold on a second.
Mm.
But anyway, what happened is they will sit there every day. And what they'd do is people would either call them to take them to that grocery store, and after they got the groceries, they'd take turns. And look, they were organized. They'd take turns, and they'd get in. Hey, you go this time. Next time it's my turn, et cetera, et cetera. They'd go down the line, and they
mm-hmm.
stayed busy, especially, like you said before, on paydays. First of the month, they'd be busy. They'd have more business than what they could handle.
Oh, man.
And look,
people be giving
you
tips at the first of the month, and they be giving you some big tips that I know they would regret a few days later.
But they had a clientele and people didn't mind it because what it was, they knew that they could rely on those guys to bring them and take them.
Right.
And those guys were... And some of those guys would help them get the groceries in the house and all of this stuff, too, and it was safe. They didn't have to worry about nobody ripping them off or what have you.
Right. Yeah, if you can get some regular customers. I didn't do it that. I did it for about 7 months or something like that. But you can get
mm-hmm.
some regular customers on that where, you know, because some people that you just didn't want in your car. But
that's right.
Yeah, the best ones, if you got some regular customers, you'd be good to go.
Yeah, some of them build up a clientele, but most of them was at random. But let me give you this. Now, Uber and Lyft, they took it to another level. But black folks was doing that for years before it was, what's the word I'm looking
exactly.
for?
I was doing it before Uber and Lyft was even thought of.
That's right. And if black folks had the mind to go in and organize it, because my uncle used to do it in New York, and they call them gypsy cabs.
Yeah, you know, they regulated that up in New York City, though.
Yeah, they regulated it, but if they had done it like what Uber and Lyft is doing,
mm-hmm.
and done it on a client basis, because, look, you know, in New York, in certain places, Yellow Cab wouldn't go there. So they
right.
had free reign. My uncle, that's how he used to make his side money, doing gypsy cabs. But like you witnessed in Maryland, in Baltimore, we were already doing it. We just didn't have the mind to organize it the way they did. And look, digitize it later on, because it was unheard of before Uber and Lyft did it.
Right.
But you realize that, you know, when you provide a service, especially when those cabs didn't want to go in certain areas,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those guys racked up. I mean, those
oh,
guys,
yeah.
some of those guys I'm talking about in Baltimore didn't do anything but hack, as they call it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
I mean, it was some days, you can start with, if you know what time of the month to do it, you can start literally with zero in your pocket to start the day and come home with $300-$400 cash.
Yeah. I know people that was doing it. I didn't know that you were mm-hmm. doing it in Maryland, and I don't know what year you was doing it. But the thing is,
the early 2000s.
I was there in 2000. I got in that area in 99. I moved in Baltimore in 2000. So you were there basically the same time I was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, making money, you don't have to be doing illegal stuff to make money. You just demonstrated that this morning. All you have to do is, like Kaiser said, find a need and fill it.
Right.
That's all you need. And there's plenty of need in black communities. Black communities are just it's an economic zone of opportunity.
Well,
because
like
there's
said,
so much
there's a lot of visible needs in the black community. And basically, if you just somebody would, you know, well, you didn't see. Just like you just mentioned it with the hacking thing, because they're trying to regulate that out in California with Uber and Lyft. But basically, you get some private clientele, and because there's a bunch of people that need a ride to the doctor. There's a bunch of people that need the ride to go grocery shopping, you know, or stuff getting stuff hauled. But if you got private clientele, you got private clientele.
Yeah, yeah. And look, they have organized it in New York. My aunt lives in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a system called Accessoride. And they pay these guys to use their private vehicles. And I don't know if you need a license to do it or how it works. It's called Accessoride. And what happened is the city subsidizes for elderly folk. They'll come to your building, pick you up, and drop you off to where you got to go. And you tell them what time you're gonna want them back. And it's got to be precisely mm-hmm. the right time. And they'll bring you back home. But there again, like you and I are talking, while these boys are out there selling drugs, see, Accessoride is subsidized by the city, but you have to be there exactly the time that you say you're going to be there or for them to pick you up. And that's an opening for those guys to do certain things in transportation without having to go out and sell drugs. But when your mind has been distorted and it's been propagandized the way our minds have been propagandized, you can't see what you've been discussing this morning. That's the sad part about it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of need in our neighborhoods. But the thing is, we have been Walmartized, Targetized, Safeway, and all of this other stuff. And they have gotten us to the point that we look for convenience. And we don't think there's an opening for us anyway except going to those businesses or how you can find a niche out within those circles where those businesses
right.
can't cover. And, you know, I'll let you go from here and let you talk to somebody else. But
well, we're going to shut it down for the day, too. Yeah, tomorrow
yeah.
we're going to probably talk more on this because I'm going to bring, if I can get her on here tomorrow, Reba Brown. She's in. She used to live in Chicago, but I think she's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin now. She does some things that I don't I got to find out what she calls those things. It could be. Remember, they used to man. What not the Big Show Expo? They used to have. It used to be advertised on. Showtime at the Apollo. They had a. It was like it wasn't a. They didn't call it a farmer's market or a flea market. It was something for black folks. It was a bunch of black vendors or man, what's it called? But the Big Show, man, I forgot. What were the big? You know the names of the like back during the 90s. It was a what's it, a Black Show Expo?
Yeah, I remember Black Show Expos. In fact,
is that still going on?
I don't know. The brother that was doing that was from your area, D.C. He was the one that coordinated all of that. The Black Expo used to go from city
yeah,
to
yeah,
city.
Yeah. Black Expo. Okay.
Yeah.
Reba does. She's always doing something. I don't know if it's I don't think it's Expo, but anyway, we're going to cover that more tomorrow because I'm looking at essentially that's I mean everybody's got a phone now or everybody's got access to something electronic even if they have to go to the public library, so it's easy to sell now. Whatever you want to sell. But it's just a matter of, you know, because like say, Angela Jasmine, it doesn't have any competition. And here's the thing. People can see the order being placed. They can see the order being made. They can see the order being delivered. And in the case of China Mac, who does something a little bit different, but China Mac occasionally shows up at his customer's house to deliver the product himself. So,
yeah.
You know, real simple things that can bring, you know, some good money to people.
Hey,
so.
It's the simple stuff that pays off. You've explained that today, and even with the hacking stuff and everything else, look, you can't get it much simpler than selling drugs. I mean, that's
right.
Just the way it is. It's the simple stuff that makes the money. And that's
now,
they've
got a Florida Black Expo that I just discovered online. There's a Florida Black Expo.
Okay.
And the Florida Black Expo takes place September the 22nd to the 24th of this year.
Where is it going
to be? Hold it. Let me scroll down here. Let's see. Florida Black Expo. They got a Facebook page, so wait a minute.
I'll go on it and check.
And I imagine if they got a Florida Black Expo, they got expos for other locations as well. Hold on, scrolling up there. Our team advisory board. You got a chef. I know they used to have that show in New York, I think somewhere in New York City. And they used to advertise it on the Showtime at Apollo. The Showtime, you know, Apollo.
Mm-hmm. The what? Black Expo that I went to.
Is it Black Show Expo?
The one that I went to was a Black Expo where vendors would go in and have their wares out there. They'd demonstrate their products and all of this stuff. Do you remember where RFK Stadium used to be?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it still there? Okay.
I don't know if it's still there, but I know where it was, over there by the Armory.
Right. That Armory was where they had the Black Expo when I first got into the D.C., Maryland area.
Right. And they had a farmer's market out that way, too.
Okay. I know I went to a flea market out that way because I used to set up out there on weekends sometimes. But there was a farmer's market out there, but there was also a
flea market there. All right, they got a Black Business Expo. The Black Business Expo, wait a minute, they got USA Virtual. That was in March, though.
Okay. But I don't know if that's the same thing we're talking about or not. I got to look it up. But look, they have a Lox Festival in Philadelphia every year. All of these black healthcare product manufacturers.
Oh, you know what? Sister Bay some years ago talked about that.
I'm planning on going to that if I can find out exactly when it's going to come off. It usually comes off in October.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go there and try and make a connection with all of those people that are manufacturing black care hair products. And the thing is, they are looking for somebody to go ahead on, and they're looking for retail outlets.
Okay.
And I've been trying to get them for years. But the thing is, that's what I'm aiming for, the latter part of the year.
Okay.
Everybody everywhere has their products on display and samples and everything.
I know there was a big show expo dealing with hair. I don't know if they still had that around because one of the organizers there, John Carlton, he passed away. He got in a car accident or something. So I don't know if his mother was still running it, and that was her thing. And then the Bonner Brothers.
Yeah,
had
I was thinking about
a big, yeah, a hair show, but the. Yeah, the Black Expo, I'll do some research on that today. As a matter of fact, we'll probably cover that tomorrow. Because, like I said, a lot of that now, with this technology, some people just, bring it to the house.
Yeah, yeah. Look, e-commerce has really changed the name of the game. No doubt
right.
about it. But if you can figure out what you can do and fill a need, yeah, it's the best way to go and find out somebody to set up that apparatus for you. Because, when I was doing the books and all of that stuff and the videotapes and all of that, I was trying to find somebody that could set up a website for me. But that's the key, is getting somebody to set you up a website or a platform where you can do all of this stuff. So
now, Robin, that might
look,
be her department. Robin, you out there? Robin, if you're out there by a phone, because I see your light.
Yeah.
Just
raise
your hand, Robin, because Robin does some stuff like that.
She's the expert. She's the person that everybody needs to get in contact with.
Well, what's good about this virtual selling is, and I'll use, China Mac or Angela. You actually, you see the product. You see it. And you see them pack it, and then, they deliver it. So it's the social proof is there. And then, you have a good sense of, all right, I just placed the order. And they see the social proof. With Angela Jasmine, it's the same thing. You see her take the order. You see the order being made. You see the people working in the background to help, you know, get the order ready and then fulfilled. And I think that, you know, people like that element these days.
Yeah, no doubt, because it's just like being in a store seeing somebody package your merchandise that you've just purchased.
Right.
Only thing is done electronically.
It, exactly.
Look,
so,
I hate to cut across you. Look, I thought about this thing with the Black Gestapo this weekend. Do you know D.W. Griffith, what, Birth of a Nation?
You
have
know,
you
I
heard
haven't
of
seen
that,
that
movie?
Movie. I've heard of it, but
yeah,
I never saw it.
I used to sell that movie, but you know, it showed what would happen if Black folks took over. And they used the Ku Klux Klan used the movie to recruit people, but it showed white folks what would happen if Black folks took over. And the thing is, it showed Black men, you know, running things and had their feet up on the desk and everything. And the one part that is similar to Black Gestapo, and we didn't mention it last week, when the Black guys took over, the first thing they did was start sleeping with white women.
Okay.
You saw that part, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, what happened is that's the same thing that happened in Birth of a Nation. They showed the Black men taking over, running things, and messing with the white women, and that's how they recruited people to join the Ku Klux Klan at the time. And I say, you know what? That's a modern-day version of Birth of a Nation. You know, where the Black man comes in and takes over everything, running things, and then after he gets successful and he becomes the boss, the next thing he wants is your woman. That was the key to Birth of a Nation, and that was the thing.
They don't like
that. Well, that's
the
key that, well, that was the propaganda that was, you know, that was subtly hinted at in Black Gestapo, because look, once you put that white woman in there, you know what's going to happen with the frame of mind. And I got to thinking, I said, you know what, ever who produced that movie, which it was Rod Perry, I think that was his name.
Yeah.
I don't know if he had that intent in mind, but the deal is this, it was a modern day version of Birth of a Nation. And the thing is, that movie went all over Black neighborhoods and everywhere else back in the 70s. I haven't seen it on TV.
I'm going to have to watch that movie. We have to do a movie on that one, because that is a classic one.
Yeah, and I think you can get Birth of a Nation online. If not, I'm going to try and track it down. And the thing is,
probably get
it
on Amazon, if anything. Amazon.
Oh, yeah, you can
everything.
Get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
If you can find something to play it on, you can get the DVD. But that was the turn of the century.
So you don't think it's been digitized yet?
Huh?
You don't think it's been digitized yet?
Yeah, you can get a DVD of it. I don't know if you can download it or not. You probably
can. I stream most of the stuff I watch. I stream it.
Oh, okay. But it's probably digitized, because I used to sell that to go along with my African book section. And the thing is, that's what started the whole thing. In fact, it was shown at the White House. That's how the propaganda started. And the thing is, when I saw Black Gestapo, I thought about Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith.
Mm.
If you ever get a chance.
When you were doing the flea market thing, you sold movies, some books, or anything else?
No, I just sold the Black paraphernalia. I sold the Black African Studies books. I did, have you ever heard of John Henry Clark, Joseph
Ben
Yochanan? Lecturers like that. I sold that. I sold Nation of Islam videos.
Okay.
And anything that dealt with Black media, I sold it. That's what I sold. Gospel
did you
tape.
Ever sell anything at what? I don't know how Lexington Market set up, but I'm sure you've been there before. Lexington Market in Baltimore?
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
Man, I heard they sell. Okay, all right.
I sold at Patapsco Flea Market.
Okay.
And, you know, when I told you that they got me $32,000 one day just charging a 25-cent admission, your buddy didn't believe that, but that was an actual fact. Because all he charged was a quarter to come in there. And on Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, that place used to be flooded. And it was right there by the inner city. All you had to do is just jump off 295, and you could get there. But those white boys, they were making a killing because everybody in the hood went there. That's all you saw there was the hood. And when you set up and you had...
Yeah, flea markets, I don't know the last one I attended, but it was up that way, but it was well attended.
Yeah,
I went there. A friend of mine, she was selling Edgar Morris skincare products. So... She went to some
you
food
might
market.
Have
it could have been the same one you're talking about.
Yeah, and they had a food court. And guess what? They sold soul food there. And guess who was cooking the soul food?
Us. I hope it was us.
Koreans. They were making a killing.
We know they were selling it, but were they cooking it too?
Some of them were cooking it, and they had some black folks in there cooking it for them.
Oh, yeah. That's
they
how
were making a killing. They were selling breakfast, and they were selling lunch there. And they couldn't keep
I know
keep
there
enough
was a mall right outside of Detroit. Detroit's Wayne County. This was Southfield, Michigan. And that was right outside, what, 8 Mile in Detroit, right over the line. I think they closed it down. I was shocked when I heard it closed down. But Southfield Mall was a pretty nice mall back in the mid-70s. And, touch of suburbia. And due to the fact that you're talking about Detroit, okay, this was still part of the Detroit metro area. Overwhelmingly, the consumers at this mall were middle-class black folk. And they had, I'll never forget it. Now, they had a food court, and, you know, you had to, you know, if you wanted Chinese, that's an obvious thing. But what I was surprised at, in this mall, and you had a lot of black merchants in this mall, okay, which that was good. But in a city like Detroit, and you got black consumers all through the mall with money, and black merchants and whatnot, but there were two nail salons in this mall, Beasley. Two nail salons, both Korean owned and operated. And I'm thinking, how could this be? Because Detroit has a lot of black hairstylists and a lot of black nail techs, but Koreans had the only two nail salons in this mall, and they were full up with black female customers.
Brother L.A., I swear to God. Well, I got to say this, and I got to agree with him. I don't agree with him all much. That's Brother Pianca say we're cursed. We're cursed. And look, you said you were hacking over there by Emerson.
Emerson Village. I would start around in Emerson Village. Matter of fact, I dropped off a lot of people there, picked up a lot of people there, and then I would come on, then go in, into the city, because you go the opposite direction, you're going out of the city.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But now,
right.
Look, there was a place in Emerson Village called Kimmy's. It was a Korean soul food place where everybody used to go in and buy their soul food. You had Koreans in there selling the soul food and Koreans cooking the stuff. I don't know if you ever saw it or not, but see, Brother
Elliot.
I
probably did see it because I was through there on a daily basis. And then as far as eating places up that way, as you know, all throughout Black Baltimore, there's lake trout.
Yeah. My buddy coined that phrase. He was the first one to use that to draw people to his fish restaurant over on Patterson Avenue. I don't forget it, but that's where that phrase come from, lake trout. But
they're making a lot of money off of it.
Oh, he did good. And then once they saw that lake trout sign, every Korean in town adopted that name. That was a common name. He should have trademarked that name. But he didn't think about it. But that's the way it is. But anyway, I just brought that up just to, you know, chime in on what you were talking about. That was a very interesting show you had today.
All right, well, we're going to pick on this tomorrow because, like I say, it's simple and it's not difficult to get into. It's just, you know, pick what you want to get into or sell. And then, you know, like I say, these people are doing a lot of stuff with just smartphones. So on that note, thank you, BZ. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I don't know, Robin, your light was on, but you're out there doing something. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
All right.